wonder, but when I do, I will never be far from you. You're in my blood, and I know you'll always be. Arkansas, you run deep in me.
Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. This past year, UALR has realized that a major change was ahead in the retirement of Chancellor Joel Anderson. He has been a quiet but very important influence since he took the position 13 and a half years ago. I knew that public radio meant a lot to him, so when he agreed to come as a guest on the Art Scene, before summer took us all in different directions, I was delighted. Both his predecessors, Charles Hathaway and James Young, in their time came to the radio station, then at the top of Stabler Hall. So he came, Joel Anderson, and answered my first question. Are you Arkansas born and bred?
I am Arkansas born and bred. I grew up in northeast Arkansas, 2 miles east of Swifton, Arkansas. And the little farm that I grew up on actually bordered Village Creek on the east side and Highway 226 on the south side.
So it was a corner of quiet peace?
It was. There were three families that lived there pretty close together, and we had a great neighborhood, lots of bicycle riding and basketball and baseball and hunting and fishing and sometimes playing games together at night when the electricity was off. The three families would gather and we'd play games by candlelight or lantern. And we had mosquitoes. I used to joke that the mosquitoes in northeast Arkansas, where I grew up, were so large that if you spotted one on your arm or leg, you swatted it hard to stun it, and then you stomped it in order to kill it.
Yes, I've heard of that in Canada as well.
Yes.
Did you have siblings, John?
I had two older sisters, yes.
And did they stay in the state or wander off?
Well, they wandered out of state like so many youngsters do these days. One of them is and has for decades lived in the St. Louis area and the other in the Louisville area. So I'm the only one of the family remaining in Arkansas.
But those two cities aren't all that far away.
That's correct.
There's still almost a link with the South, with their histories as well.
Those. Yes.
But I just wondered, with you yourself, where did you go to school?
Well, I graduated from Swifton High School. I had 25 persons in my graduating class there, so it was a small school that has since been consolidated. Then a bachelor's degree at Harding College, now Harding University in Searcy. Then on to Washington, D.C., where every political scientist loves to go, loves to study, loves to visit, and did a master's degree in international relations at American University. Then after that, a Ph.D. in political science at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor.
So how in that little village that you grew up in did you get attracted to politics?
It's an interesting question to me. I think there really were two sources of that. One was that my father ran for sheriff twice in Jackson County, lost both elections by less than 100 votes, which meant that a number of folks weren't all that convinced that he had really lost the elections. But in any event, someone else took office, and he liked to talk politics. But then in addition to that, I think my interest in international relations came from the fact that we had a very eminent athlete in Swifton, George Kell, just a really fine human being. He was more my father's age, but he subscribed to U.S. News and World Report and then gave those copies to the library, the little high school library. And I really enjoyed reading those magazines and particularly the national and international news in them.
Did you have an early interest and love of radio?
Yes, radio was important. Television did not come into my life until about the sixth or seventh grade. Radio was it. Although I was a quite little kid at the time, I remember during the Korean War, We would be eating supper in the evening, and the radio would be on, and we would be hearing the news reports on the Korean War. I'm not quite sure why that sticks in my mind, but it does. And then, of course, all of the entertainment that we got in the way of music in particular came by way of the radio stations. On some nights, we could get Chicago. Some nights, we could get New Orleans. And Memphis was another station or another city that we sometime would reach. But yes, radio was very important.
Were there many talk shows?
There were not. There was a small station at Newport, which was 20 miles away. Newport was the county seat. I don't recall talk stations. Now, Arthur Godfrey was on air then, and I guess that would qualify. I had not thought about that as a talk radio show because it had a mix of entertainment on it, but at the same time, that would perhaps have been an early version of talk radio.
So a show like that would have reference to things that were going on in the country that
yes,
I remember. Yes, there
would have been that. He would have had guests from time to time, as well as musical numbers that were a part of it. But my mother was a fan of Arthur Godfrey.
Did you have any favorites as radio became a little bit more involved with the life and the world of the country and people that you wouldn't have had a chance to go and see that you could hear about?
Well, we were fairly limited by the reception we could get. And that meant that, you know, particularly when I get to high school, the radio station or stations, there were two or three around in Newport, Jonesboro, Walnut Ridge that we could get. And what my friends and I were listening to were, you know, this new thing, rock and roll. And, you know, Elvis Presley was from over at Memphis and, in fact, made an appearance in our high school when he was making his rise. But that would have been the favorite. I do remember later in my college years, we would sometimes be able to get a station out of Chicago, and there was a disc jockey named, I think, Dick Biondi that was pretty popular at the time. Mm-hmm. We could sometimes get classical music out of, WLS in New Orleans that we would listen to.
So that sort of widened your horizons somewhat.
Yes, yes, very much so.
So when you were up in Washington getting your final degrees?
Master's degree.
Did you stay for a job there and work there, or where were you setting your sights? What dreams and ideas did you have?
Well, I had decided pretty belatedly as an undergraduate that I was going to aim for being a college teacher. One of my mentors had encouraged that, and so that meant, you know, I needed to get a master's degree and then probably after that a doctorate degree. But that was what set me on my course. I went to American University because they had a well-known international relations program at the time. There was also a friend that I had known who had gone there for his doctorate. So in a sense, I followed him. Ann and I were just newly married at the time that I just finished graduating from Harding, and then we were married later that summer and then moved within a week or two to Washington.
Had you met her at university?
Yes. She and I met at Harding and were married, and that's been, 52 years ago now.
That places you comfortably in a fairly busy part of the country with your particular interests. So did you find a job there that really appealed to you?
No, I went back to Harding and taught a year and a half there with my master's degree and then made the move to Ann Arbor and to the University of Michigan. But while I was there, I certainly had a fair amount of interaction with the Arkansas congressional delegation. That would have been Congressman Mills' office, Wilbur Mills, and also Senator Fulbright. J. William Fulbright was very much in his heyday as chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and I knew a number of staff members there at the time.
No, those are names that were pretty powerful.
Yes, they were. It was just a wonderful place for a political scientist to live for a year and a half.
Had you ever been down south to Little Rock when you were growing up and going to college?
Yes, but that was a very special kind of experience. We were about 100 miles from Little Rock and also about 100 miles from Memphis, but we mostly would come to Little Rock in the fall. We would come down here typically before Christmas time and do Christmas shopping, and there would be other occasions that would bring us to Little Rock, but the 100 miles between Little Rock and Swifton at that point in time, that was a major trip.
I can imagine. Almost like the pig trail when you come up north. So when you did finally come down, other than to shop, were there ideas that were sparking with people you met that interested you?
Well, The connection that I felt to Little Rock and that had some significance in my taking a job here was that in my college years at Harding, as well as when I was teaching for a year and a half there, I was very much tuned in to the state political scene and had been involved in a campaign or two as a student. And in Little Rock, there were a number of progressive politicians, which was very much where, you know, my mind and heart was at the time. You know, if you go back to the 1960s, there were a lot of things that needed to be done in Arkansas government and politics. And among those politicians that I admired and appreciated was one named Calvin Ledbetter, who later chaired the well, maybe at that time he was chair of the political science department. But in any event, Cal Ledbetter was a person who made Little Rock University and then UALR attractive to me.
And so had it changed to UALR by the time you came down?
It had been UALR 2 years when I came in 1971, yes. And Dr. Ledbetter hired me.
Ah, and what position did you?
I was an assistant professor of political science.
And where was the college on campus? How big was the campus at that point?
Well, it was only the original 80 acres at that point in time, which meant that what's now called Larson Hall and the Education Building and the Nursing Building were the main classroom buildings of the campus. There was a science building, a small one, and there was a smaller classroom building that's now Stabler Hall, although at that point in time it was only three or four stories.
Was the Fine Arts Building built at that point?
It was not.
So that came along.
That I know came later.
It was there when we came. We came in 78. But I wondered, when did UALR get a radio station? Could you remember that?
Yes. My recollection is that the approval for the transmitter and the station, or I guess the approval for the station and then the purchase of the transmitter, happened in 1978 or 1979. Now, when I became provost in 1984, KUAR was still not up. It still was not on the air. And Chancellor Jim Young gave me the assignment. We were moving. Mary Jean Thomas was the dean at the time and an important player in all of this. And we were wanting to, you know, get KUAR up and on the air, but Chancellor Young said, we've got KLRE in town at the school district. Let's see if we can work together. And so that's when I got connected to and really met and got acquainted with Ruth Steele, who had been the person at the school district that was the real force behind KLRE.
Wanting classical music. And
yes.
That eventually, you know, in its early days, it was like 4 hours a day that
yes.
it would have something.
And in any event, that led to negotiations between the two, where the initial plan was to have one station that would belong to both the district and the university. And it was John Bortel. I actually remember walking, on those external walkways at Stabler Hall one time when he said, why don't we keep both stations? I think we can do it financially.
My guest is Dr. Joel Anderson.
And my, initial thought was, well, I don't think there's any way in the world we can afford to have two stations. But in any case, it was a really fascinating proposition to have two stations, one that could be more focused on, classical music and jazz, and then the other that could be more news-oriented. And so, lo and behold, within not very much period of time, everybody agreed, both at the university and at the school district, that that would make sense. And so both stations were jointly licensed to the school district and the university for several years.
Now, when was it that KLRE got to 7,000 watts and we finally were able to hook up with the NPR programs? When did NPR start? Do you have
that? That actually gets back before my involvement. Now, it happened, I think that for a while KLRE was just a sandbox station for the school district. And then in the, I'm going to say around 83 or 84, they got whatever approvals were necessary to go to 40,000 watts. And that's when they really became a major force, a major presence in the university. But of course, the fact that they were 40 and KUAR was going to be 100,000 watts meant that the initial plan with the school district was we would have one 100,000 watt station. But, you know, we've ended up, thankfully, with one of each. But that that precedes when I became provost and when the university and the partnership came on the scene. So I can't fill in the details at that stage for KLRE.
So when you said that you had the station on campus, but it wasn't on air, was this even before KLRE got the 40,000 wattage so it could carry some of the NPR
station? We had the approval, but we actually didn't have a station, period. We were not on air in any sense.
So KLRE was still the only game in town for that.
Correct. And I do think, and I'm actually quite sure of this, that they had established an NPR relationship before we began to deal with them and talk about any kind of merger. I think by the time you get to the end of 1980s, that the school district decided to get out of the public radio business, and both of them then became exclusively licensed to the university. Together, the school district and the university, by the end of the 1980s, I think had done a really great thing for this community and for Central Arkansas. I mean, the two public radio stations here have just been phenomenal assets that I've been really proud of. But in any event, it transitioned very smoothly when the time came to being, just two UALR radio stations. And again, I think since then that we had Regina Dean as the general manager for a number of years. And then we had, of course, the, now the late Ben Fry. We, under both of those, the station continued to advance in really significant ways.
And they weren't afraid to try something new.
That's correct.
And to bring on people with
yes.
a spark. And started the sort of intern program that has led to some very fine reporting.
Yes.
And it's remarkable how it touches just about everybody
it
on
does.
Campus, I think. Can you look back and think of things particularly that you shine for and feel that some of your dreams have been realized?
Well, that's a huge question to ask someone who's been at an institution for 45 years. Certainly public radio, when I started, was not on my list. It was not until the 1980s that it became a part of the university, in a sense, a part of my agenda. But I would say public radio at UALR has probably become everything that I would ever have hoped that it would. And the span of service, not only covering the arts, the cultural community, but also the news, the strong NPR programs. And in addition to that, what I am particularly proud of is the locally generated and produced programs such as Art Scene.
Thank you.
I think yours may be the oldest, the longest running of all of them. It goes back to the mid-80s if you go back to KLRE, right?
1985. Started.
Okay, so that means we're going on 31, 32 years here. There are multiple faculty members at the institution that have generated in a lot of instances these one-minute programs that I think are so enriching. We've got some government agencies now that are doing the same thing in terms of the kind of the physical and cultural heritage of the state. We're getting programs on those, and I think that that's what really sets KUAR apart. I don't hear programs like that at other public radio stations around the country.
And no, I think that's good because they're well written and they focus on particular points of interest in the different parts of the state or the different
yes.
parts of history, which is what one hears without realizing it, absorbing it. And it almost ought to be available to every high school, that they should have these moments. And
they are professional. I think mm-hmm. that's the key to their success, is not only do you have, if you have someone like a John Kirk talking mm-hmm. about Arkansas history, you've got someone who knows what they're talking about. But in addition to that, they've prepared and recorded in such a way that it fits a high-quality radio station, and there are just numerous examples of that, including programs that you can hear on Saturday night. There's one about what is it? Not necessarily Nashville.
Yes, with Slap.
Is I think a very interesting and enjoyable program.
Oh, geez, I get a lot of recordings coming to me, and I automatically put them in
yes.
her show. I said, I think you can probably use this.
Yes.
And she often does because she's got such a wide knowledge of things. And then we've got other ones that KABF sometimes provides.
Yes.
And I think it has to have made a difference to the city's appreciation of the campus. Because when we moved here, I was almost told, oh, we don't go to anything south of 630. When the gate, the forest that lay north of the campus was automatically accepted as being kept for a fine arts center. And it didn't come off, but it would have been perfect.
Yes.
Because it was right within the boundaries of the city with bus transport and everything. And now it's interesting. I don't know if you've heard about this new Performing Arts Center in North Pulaski County Tech.
I'm aware of it. I have not seen it yet.
Well, I went to the performance of Bohem that they put on a few weeks ago. It's a lovely little hall. It seats about 500 comfortably and has a good pit and a good stage. I don't know much about that, but Philip Mann and others have been talking about it. And it would be nice to incorporate something like that within the arts as they go through the city. And it does seem to me that the radio station has done a lot to help break down that barrier.
I think it has. And one of the things that I think can give a person involved with a university hope about almost anything that's not present at the moment and that you wish were there, there's a pretty good chance that in the future it will be realized. Universities have very long lives. Good things just keep happening, and more good things will be happening in the arts here at this institution. I mean, we've got a new building about to go up over on 28th Street for Applied Art and Design, and I think that's just sort of the latest example, such a marvelous development.
Yeah, I remember reading when that was in the works, and now, of course, they're still next door.
Yes.
But with luck, I don't know, there's been so much work put into the station that it may be, it won't move as easily if it does.
No, I'll tell you what I think every time I come into the station and see the amount of space, and my guess is that the more recent employees who have no memory of what it used to be over in Stabler Hall may feel like things are getting a little bit cramped here. But in any kind of longer-term perspective, the station has certainly not fabulous facilities here, but certainly accommodating facilities.
Palatial when we first moved
yes,
here.
Yes, yes.
And it's just, there's nothing ever shut a door. There's always something to look forward to. we've just about done. But I did want to ask you, now that we've come to this point, you've got the end of the month, the end of the fiscal year, when you finally walk off campus. And what will you do now, Joe?
Well, certainly the day that I walk off campus, there will be emotion in it. I'm ready to retire. I'm unhesitating in that respect. I'm excited about the coming of a new chancellor. I think that will be really good for the campus and really good for the city. But I intend the first year to keep a low profile. Chuck Hathaway's always been very nice in that regard to me. He's, as the former chancellor, never been guilty of, upstaging me or distracting attention or complicating my work as chancellor, and I'm certainly going to follow that example with the new one. But I think a year of winding down, and we're, of course, having to do some downsizing in our move into a different house, and it's all deliberate that's smaller, but
Have you found something that you like?
Yes. We're very happy. We're going to be living here in the city, but over a lifetime, you accumulate an awful lot of stuff. I've remarked several times in the last few months about the curse of stuff, and we really have that. But that will take some time, and we've got grandkids, and we've got friends, and we're going to do some traveling, so I think there will be a lot to occupy my time. And then after that, I'll have had time to, look around and see what opportunities there are and what I might like to get involved in. And I suspect I will want to get back out involved on the race question in some shape, form, or fashion.
I was fascinated talking to one of the members of the theater department when he said that UALR was built on the Trail of Tears. There's so much history in Arkansas that needs to be part of everyday life, really,
yes,
for people to know exactly where it's come from and where it might be going. Who knows?
Yes, and the Trail of Tears Park, which is right outside this building where we're working right now, is one of those treasures that's always been there. And so you can look at something like that and say, well, that came along belatedly. Yes, it did, but it did come along. In time, the university saw that, took advantage of it, and then made it into what it is today. And that's one of the great things about universities. They just keep doing that sort of thing, retrieving the past, redeeming things that need to be saved and shared. And we've done a lot of that, but I'm sure much, 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 much more is going to be done in the coming decades.
Well, bless you. Thank you for coming, and it was lovely to talk to you.
Well, and let me say something before we adjourn here, Anne. I want to say a big thank you to you, and I know that there are thousands of people hearing this that would say a hearty amen to it. It's pretty phenomenal to have done the program that you've done for 31 years, and the fact that it has stayed on the air that length of time, I hope you will regard as marvelous affirmation of the contribution that you've made.
Well, I love it. And I meet the most marvelous people from the beginning to who knows how many years ahead.
Yes.
And particularly having the chance to talk to somebody like you with what you've done and how many lives you've touched in the places you've been and the people you've met.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
That was Dr. Joel Anderson, just retired as Chancellor of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, a major and positive influence in all his roles, first as Assistant Professor, then Associate, then Department Chair, Dean, Provost, to Chancellor, and particularly in the history and fortunes of UALR Public Radio. Thank you, Joel Anderson. And that concludes this week's program. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UALR Public Radio.